Thank you for joining today's podcast, where experts tackle bronchiolitis obliterans syndrome and discuss the differentiation of phenotypes, current gaps, and emerging treatment strategies. Today's sponsor is Zambone USA Limited. Zambone is currently advancing its phase 3 clinical development program for the treatment of bronchiolitis obliterans syndrome, or BOS. Joining us for the podcast today are Drs. Justin Rosenheck from Columbus, Ohio, and Dr. Stephen Hayes from San Francisco, California. Dr. Rosenheck.
Hi, this is Justin Rosenheck. I'm a transplant pulmonologist at Columbus, Ohio. I've been a transplant pulmonologist for about 4 years now, and I just love this population and really everything to do with it.
Dr. Hayes.
Thanks, Jeff. I'm Steve Hayes. I am a lung transplant pulmonologist and the medical director of the lung transplant program at UCSF, where I've been for approximately 25 years and a lung transplant pulmonologist for 20 of those.
Thank you. In our first podcast with Dr. Shambu Ariel and Howard Wong, we talked about the present and future clinical directions of bronchiolitis obliterans syndrome. There, we discussed the current status of biomarkers as tools for early detection, diagnosis, and at a high level, the role of lung function monitoring, such as FEV1 decline, as an indicator of BOS versus a biomarker approach. We also touched upon the importance of early diagnosis on patient outcomes and unmet needs in diagnosis and treatment from the clinician and patient perspectives. In our second podcast with Dr. Shambu Ariel and Justin Rosenheck, we took a deep dive into the role of FEV1 pre-BOS and post-lung transplantation. We examined the relationship between lung function and patient quality of life in patients with BOS, and closed with the utility of biomarkers to predict the biology of CLAD and BOS. In today's podcast, we will explore three topics. One, differentiating phenotypes of CLAD post-lung transplantation. Two, we will examine the current gaps in emerging treatment strategies for BOS. And lastly, we will discuss the advances made in BOS diagnosis and management over the past decade. Let's start with differentiating among phenotypes of CLAD post-lung transplantation with Dr. Stephen Hayes. Dr. Hayes, what are the different phenotypes of CLAD that occur post-lung transplantation?
Thanks, Jeff. Well, first, I'd like to comment that like most diseases, CLAD is composed of a range of phenotypes, but I think I would argue that it is likely composed of at least a couple of different endotypes. And I use the term endotype because these are likely not just subtypes categorized by clinical features, but by a distinct functional or pathobiological mechanism. At one end, you have this classical airway-centered disease or BOS, and on the other end, you have a more parenchymal or pleural-based disease we call RAS. And I think it's important for us to try to categorize patients into these endotypes so we can better understand the various risk factors and hence understand the pathophysiology, but also predict outcomes since these endotypes tend to have different rates of progression and prognosis. And finally, it may help us really distinguish what management strategies or treatments should be applied. So thinking about these different differentiation of these types of CLAD, I think we still mostly use physiologic and radiographic changes to differentiate. In obstructive CLAD or BOS, the predominant physiology is obstruction, as demonstrated by a dropping FEV1 and an FEV1 to FVC ratio. In addition, there may be signs of air trapping as defined by a rising residual volume. Radiographically, you really may not see much on the CT scan. You might see some mosaic attenuation that represents air trapping. As the subtype progresses, one may see bronchial wall thickening and eventually bronchiectasis in BOS. In restrictive CLAD, or RAS, the predominant physiology is restrictive, with a reduced total lung capacity and vital capacity, and a preserved or even increased FEV1 to FVC ratio. And radiographically, one may see classically upper lobe predominant areas of parenchymal airspace opacities, reticular changes, volume loss, and even pleural thickening.
Dr. Hayes, are these differences subtle or are these easily delineated among these different classes?
Well, I think at either end of the spectrum, the difference in the physiology and the radiology can be fairly easy delineated. And if we follow distinct criteria, such as those outlined in the ISHLT guidelines, we can categorize these patients. However, there continues to be some degree of overlap in a similar way to how we think about COPD, endotypes, phenotypes being chronic bronchitis versus emphysema. They're distinct at the ends of the spectrum, but there are many patients in the middle who have features of both.
And what does each of these phenotypic patients look like? And can we define them clinically?
Well, at the risk of being redundant, let me be concise here. CLAD is specifically defined as a persistent drop in FEV1, plus minus FVC, where the FEV1 is dropped to below 80% of the average of the two best measures. If the patient has obstruction, as defined by an FEV1 to FVC ratio of less than 0.7, and has no restriction, as defined by a normal total lung capacity, and no CTO opacities, then that person by definition has BOS. If, on the other hand, the patient does not have obstruction, but does have restriction, as defined by a drop in total lung capacity and CT opacities, that are then that person is characterized as having RAS. Of course, there are mixed phenotypes where a patient has both signs of obstruction, restriction, and opacities. And there's also these kind of undefined phenotypes that have different combinations of these features, which we don't know exactly how they fit into the grand scheme.
How do we reconcile among the mixed phenotype? Does this phenotype morph one way or the other way into RAS or BOS, or does mixed primarily stay as a mixed phenotype?
I mean, that's a really great question. I think it's still a bit of an unknown. I think it kind of comes back to some of the unclear pathophysiology of this entity. I think if we agree that the phenotype may be determined by the site or the type of injury, you can envision that there are some injuries that affect several different regions of the lungs simultaneously, creating this sort of mixed phenotype. You may also envision that this injury may migrate initially involving the airways, creating more of a BOS phenotype, and then morphing as it progresses into the lung parenchyma into a phenotype that more resembles RAS. And we've certainly seen this clinically manifest itself in patients.
Let's pivot now to understanding the current gaps in treatment strategies for BOS. In general, Dr. Rosenheck, what are the current gaps in the diagnosis and management of patients with BOS?
This is a difficult question to answer. I think there are a lot of gaps. And if you talk to enough clinicians and transplanters, you'll certainly hear different perspectives. Some that I could share, I think there are major gaps in our ability to diagnose this disease in a timely manner. We know CLAD is not formally diagnosed until there's a drop in 20% from baseline FEV1, but we also recognize that this is somewhat of an arbitrary definition. There's a window of FEV1 decline between 10 and 20% where we should be initiating a workup for potential CLAD, but what's lost in that time period? I think more ideally, we would have a way to be able to diagnose chronic lung allograft dysfunction really before lung function decline and symptom onset. The diagnosis of CLAD can also be somewhat subjective. I think our current guidelines actually do a really excellent job detailing the conditions that exclude the diagnosis of CLAD and giving us some really concise, timely parameters of when to start considering CLAD. But clinically, the diagnosis can remain really difficult. Timing of spirometry can be difficult, especially in our patients that are far out from transplant. So sometimes when we first recognize a lung function decline, we can be starting our workup at a disadvantage. It could even be difficult at times to appropriately rule in or rule out CLAD. And again, the most current ISHLT guidelines speak specifically to this, but sometimes there could even be hesitancy in providing patients with this diagnosis, especially when the confirmation can be nebulous. I think sometimes some of us may seek to delay giving a formal diagnosis as we wait really for the dust to settle from an acute decline in lung function. We really want to be sure when we're giving our patients this diagnosis. To that end, the availability of a reliable biomarker to diagnose and follow clad activity is a major gap. A definitive objective measure that's readily obtainable and reliably interpretable would really go a long way in early intervention and hopefully improved care for our patients. To continue, another gap is finding high quality, available, and effective therapies for our patients. There are a few treatment options that we have at our disposal, but their efficacy is imperfect, and many come with really significant side effects, risks, or impacts on quality of life. I think we really need to identify high quality studies that show a meaningful impact of these interventions and really isolate some of these interventions that'll give us the best benefit for our patients. And to echo Dr. Hayes, I think there's more to the story of endotyping as well. As clinicians, we can recognize all of the different risk factors that our patients have for CLAD and for BOS, but recognize also that not all patients will develop CLAD. And two patients with similar risk factors might develop different phenotypes of CLAD. Even further, and I think Dr. Hayes will agree with me, we can see a patient with chronic lung allograft dysfunction manifest in many different ways. There are some patients who will have a slowly progressive form of their disease and other patients that will have a relentlessly aggressive form of their disease. Better understanding what drives really any of these manifestations can help us really best care for our patients.
Is there a way to align treatment strategies with CLAD phenotypes or basically the mechanism of the actual disease?
Well, I'll start by saying that after recognizing the development of really any form of chronic lung allograft dysfunction, I think this is a signal that the treating team should closely review the patient, should closely review their immunosuppression regimen, their clinical history, and engage in a search for modifiable risk factors. It's reasonable at that time to consider increasing monitoring for all of our patients, at least until they demonstrate some degree of stability. And patients should really have their immunosuppression optimized while we look for reversible causes of lung function decline and treat them as able. Beyond that, we can certainly seek to align our treatment strategies with CLAD phenotypes and maybe even to a small extent, mechanisms of disease. Antifibrotic agents are potentially an option for our patients with restrictive allograft disease, and their use and safety has been demonstrated in a number of cases and case series throughout the years. It doesn't appear to date, however, that the use of antifibrotic agents will have the same benefit in patients with obstructive chronic lung allograft disease.
Dr. Hayes, do you have anything that you'd like to add?
I had a very similar thoughts to the management and the fact that we're still really early in the process of identifying specific therapies for specific phenotypes or endotypes of CLAD. I think some of them make some rational sense that we're just don't have all the data yet to show that certain therapies are more beneficial than others for particular phenotypes or endotypes. I do think that there's a strong rationale for using inhaled therapies for diseases that seem to be manifesting themselves in the airway. So I think that's an exciting area of development. Different forms of inhaled, whether they're immunosuppressive agents or biologics, to target some of the proposed mechanisms of airway-centric CLAD, I think is an exciting area.
Our last topic for today is the advances that have been made in BOS over the last decade. We'll start with Dr. Rosenheck. With BOS being labeled as the holy grail of lung transplantation, what advances have been made to our understanding, diagnosis, and management of BOS?
Well, at the basic level, I think we're slowly increasing our understanding of the actors and mechanisms underlying BOS and the inflammatory, immune, and non-immune risk factors driving BOS. Dr. Hayes' group has recently pre-published their work on PGD, telomere length, and risk of chronic lung allograft dysfunction. Other groups have done transcriptomic analysis of molecular drivers of CLAD. Others are investigating the role of HLA in eplet matching, and still others, the role of self-antigens to collagen type 5 and K-alpha-1 tubulin in instigating CLAD. I think we're gaining an increasing understanding of innate and adaptive immune responses and the roles of various interleukins and chemokines in different compartments, including lung tissue, BAL, and even peripheral sampling.
Dr. Hayes, how about our advances in diagnosis?
I think that in addition to understanding the mechanisms of BOS and CLAD and RAS, I do think we're making some headway from a diagnostic perspective. I think there's some really exciting work coming out of UCSF and Pittsburgh looking at, for example, these CLAD signature gene profiling. This work has shown that there is a particular gene expression profile that has been associated with a strong risk of developing CLAD. And the current studies have really been retrospective, but we're hoping that over time, these types of analyses could be used prospectively to not only diagnose patients, but to also give some form of prognosis. Another Toronto and Dr. Martineau has also done some really exciting work looking at biomarkers in BAL fluid, and these are all biomarkers of epithelial cell injury. These have not only been shown to really diagnose or help diagnose CLAD, but also differentiate the different phenotypes of CLAD. Finally, I think we are using more and more biomarkers that indicate increased cell turnover in the lung. These are donor-derived cell-free DNA. I think these assays can be very helpful. We're looking for particular assays that help pick up on early lung injury, which seems to be the sort of sentinel event in the development of CLAD. This type of biomarker could really help increase the sensitivity of our detection for that kind of insult. So I'm excited about that, those prospects in the diagnostic area.
And now let's talk about the advances that have been made in management strategies.
I think that going back to, you know, what Justin had said earlier, when we have a patient who's diagnosed with CLAD or BOS, we really kind of go back to the basics of going through a checklist of the potential reversible causes, such as, do this person have acute rejection infection, AMR, DSAs, gastroesophageal reflux disease? And then our treatments are really trying to target those primary instigators of this lung injury. Once we've kind of gone through that checklist, you know, we typically use therapies and medications that are available to us, including extracorporeal photopheresis. Some patients receive mTOR inhibitors, and then others are enrolled in clinical trials. We have patients, for example, enrolled in clinical trials investigating the use of inhaled liposomal cyclosporine. We also have a new clinical trial looking at inhaled sirolimus for patients who have early CLAD. In terms of targeting therapies, I think as Justin mentioned before, we have kind of very few disease or phenotype-driven therapies. One phenotype that Justin mentioned, which we also use, is if a patient does have a particularly neutrophilic form of airway disease, then that person may respond more readily to azithromycin. And then we do use antifibrotic agents for certain types of restrictive allograft syndrome, where there's a predominance of fibrosis and or kind of an NSIP pattern of fibrosis.
How would we characterize the overall progress that has been made for BOS over the last decade? Dr. Rosenheck?
I think that we're starting to really see meaningful progress. Just in my short career, I've started to see the clinical use of biomarkers like donor-derived cell-free DNA, as Dr. Hayes mentioned earlier. And I'm reading more and more about exciting new biomarkers and therapies that are increasingly becoming available to our patients. I am optimistic that the future is really bright, that we're going to have improved management strategies, diagnostic and therapeutic options for our patients in the relatively near term.
Dr. Hayes?
Well, in terms of the incidence of BOS, unfortunately, I don't know that we've done a great job impacting that. I think the incidence of BOS is still fairly high, where about 50% of patients develop BOS within the first 5 years. I think what I've noticed, what I've realized over the 20-year arc of my career is there's certain, mechanisms that are better understood now. I think we all now understand that CLAD in general is the instigating factor of some form of injury to the lung, epithelial injury, which then drives this sort of aberrant healing response and produces scarring that is either in the airways and or the lung parenchyma. I think we are definitely doing a better job taking care of patients with CLAD. I think patients are living longer. I think we have some management strategies that seem to slow the progression of the disease, really zeroing in on some of the inciting causes of CLAD, for example, really being aggressive with reflux disease, implementing the things that we know work in some patients like extracorporeal photopheresis and other treatments. But I think there's still a lot to understand. And moreover, we need this ongoing interest in the development of new drugs, drugs specifically designed for lung transplantation. You know, we've really, really had only access to drugs that were kind of borrowed from other types of transplant. So I think it's really exciting that in the last 5 to 10 years, we've seen drugs that are specifically designed to manage patients with lung transplant. And these are some of the inhaled therapies that we see coming and under investigation now, as well as some really exciting use of biologics that may have been designed for different disease process, but they're being adopted by lung transplant for specific pathophysiology or mechanisms that we've identified. So I think the future is bright. I think, and it's mainly through a better understanding of what's going on, better, I think, longitudinal care of our patients. And I think transplant patients have a bright future.
Well, that concludes our discussion today on the differentiation of CLAD phenotypes, current gaps, and emerging treatment strategies. Once again, we would like to thank our experts for participating in the podcast. We'd also like to thank our sponsor, Zambone USA Limited, and most importantly, thank you for listening to this podcast.
At Zambone, we know the big difference between living and truly living. Since 1906, we've been committed to innovating cure and care to make patients' lives better. We are aiming to deliver medicines and modern healthcare solutions that allow them to get the most out of their time. Because at Zambone, quality of life means deeply enjoying each moment. Life enhanced.